Everybody loves somebody sometimes, especially here on Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and on this week's show, we'll be handing a bouquet of roses to the Vivian Girls. We'll shove our critical tongues down the throats of new music from Jeffrey Lewis, Phoenix, and Jonathan Jeremiah. And we'll be bawling inconsolably into the best of your face back. But first things first, it's that object of lust for all of those with a fetish for beards and wry introspection. It's Bonnie Prince Billy.
And can you see what's inside of me? Many times we've been out drinking, and many times we've shared our thoughts.
That was I See a Darkness by Bonnie Prince Billy, aka various other pseudonyms and a given name, Will Oldham. Without Will, there would be no alt.country, no alt.folk, and no alt.facial hair, for that matter. Originally performing under a variety of monikers incorporating the word palace, Oldham has influenced more artists than he's had pseudonyms. His Bonnie Prince Billy persona adds a degree of levity to proceedings, to the extent that this artist, who likes to muse on the imminence of death, has popped up ghost-riding the combine harvester on Kanye West videos. Our Rosie Swash is, as you might expect, a big fan, so when she got the opportunity to chat to him recently, she didn't pass it up, and she began by asking him about his new record, so whether it's a follow-up to his previous one or a completely new departure.
I feel like in some sense it's definitely some kind of follow-up. Yeah, it is. It is to some extent. Simply because I knew from finishing Lie Down in the Light and turning it into the record companies, I knew that I would be from then on preparing for this next record. And so it's the only time I ever really thought like that, I guess.
So do you feel like recording it in Chicago had a real influence on the sound?
We recorded in Chicago kind of to lessen the amount of logistical obstacles that we'd be having to deal with, because Josh Abrams and Michael Zarang are all based there, or were based there, you know, and definitely it couldn't have been that record any other city, because all those things which are now crucial to the record, they were like sperm in a ball sack. Yeah, not even a win, yeah.
So, say for example, something like Master and Everyone, Marty Slayton's role in the atmosphere that mm-hmm. her voice and your voice working together built. At what point did she enter into the album? Were you like, actually, you know what we really need is a female range to... Is that...
Yeah, it was...
Really?
Yeah, it really was.
Do you know what I'm wanting to do? I'm going... to find something true.
The moment that she started singing was like a hugely defining moment for me in my working life, because it was like, yeah, it would be great to have a female singer on some of these songs. And Mark, who recorded the record, said, well, I know the head of the singers union here in Nashville, I'll just give him a call. What kind of singer are you looking for? And I was like, well, maybe we can find somebody who's like Sandy Denny crossed with Dolly Parton. Immediately, like, I felt something from her, you know, I was just like, oh, this woman seems amazing. And then when she started singing, I was just like, I cannot believe it. I can't believe that this can happen, you know, that a stranger can walk in and I can have these feelings about how her voice is working with this music.
Her own music is so totally different from anything she does with you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like pure country pop.
It's pure it's country, amazing. And you know, yeah. When she said, you know, the next time we worked together, I called her and she's like, "Oh, I'm so glad to see you. You know, I got so many hits on my website because of that record I did with you." But at the same time, it doesn't occur to her to mention that record on her website, because she's probably at the same time confused and or humiliated by Master and Everyone.
Then we start it all again. Why do you frown? Why do you try? Why don't you lie down in the light?
Quite recently there was a piece in The Guardian which is written, a guy writes under a pen name and he sort of tears other musical publications to shreds.
Wonderful.
And he was talking about the popularity of Bon Iver, and basically he was kind of appalled because he said Bon Iver is a populist's Bonnie Prince Billy. Mm. And he described your kind of coming back in the early stages of your career as super literate, post-hardcore singer-songwriter, flying in the face of clearly established sonic order.
Mm.
Is that an accurate description?
Yeah, it's way too narrow. Yeah.
Do you think people sometimes read a little bit too much into it, or?
I hope not. I mean, because I read too much into it, so I feel comfortable with people who read a lot into it, even if it's completely different from what I think about it. Yeah.
And the comparisons to Bon Iver, or Bon Iver's comparisons to you?
Most of my experience with that name is reading little blurbs or something like that. And from reading the blurbs, it sounds like he's at least allowing himself to be represented in kind of a... It's like he's got a movie tagline that goes with...
And
immediately that's a little disconcerting. Unless the stories that seem to come with his press release are completely false, turns my stomach a little bit. But I haven't heard the music, and I've, you know, my booking agent in the States was like, I was asking him, what have you been booking that's good? And he said that he really liked this guy, but I don't always turn to my booking agent for musical guidance, even though he's a good friend.
He's selling out a lot of shows.
Selling out, all right.
How did you feel about I Am a Cold Rock, I Am a Dull Grass, Will Oldham tribute record?
Uh-huh. I was scared. I think I had a copy of it for 6 months before I got up the courage to put it on. And then when I put it on, I really liked it. Partly it felt like it was like a return conversation with each of these musicians, like as if I had said something and then they were saying something back and I got to hear an actual response. That was pretty amazing.
I am the king of infinite space.
I have to ask about your experience of Trapped in the Closet, Chapter 15.
Yeah.
Did you actually get to meet R. Kelly?
Yes.
How?
Yeah. I got to meet him very briefly because we got to go to a show of his the summer before in Chicago, and so I got his autograph, and I saw like in his dressing room a garbage bin, you know, dustbin or whatever. A wrapper for a store-bought do-rag, and I took that wrapper, you know, as a souvenir.
Does he know this?
No, he doesn't know that. Yeah, and then whatever. 9 months later, or a year later, or so this woman that I knew who worked with him called, said, you know, there might be a role here. Would you be interested in coming playing? I was like, yeah. So went to Chicago, went to his house, and we rehearsed at his house, and the next night we had dinner, all like as a big group, the cast and crew and him. And then the next day, we worked all day long, you know, and he's hands-on, you know, he's completely hands-on the whole time, you know, he's got smoking a big cigar during the rehearsal, but just directing everybody and, you know, playing everybody's part against the other person and just very vocal, very accommodating. You know, when we walked into the house, you know, one of his first things, he came up and put his hand on my shoulder, he's like, can I get you anything, baby?
That was Will Oldham, a.k.a. Bonnie Prince Billy, and his album Beware will be out on March the 16th. Now, sadly, we can't get more feedback on the Billy experience as Rosie is off on holes this week, gallivanting around New York. But we've got the next best thing instead, though that is next best by quite a distance. It's only Man About Town, Tim Jones.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, I try to big you up, you know, fill you full of confidence before we get chatting. Are you well?
I am. Do you know why I'm standing in for Rosie?
Why is that?
Because you said earlier that you'd given a bouquet of Rosie to Crystal Stilts. No, Vivian Girls.
Yeah, difficult, yeah.
Vivian
Easy mistake
Girls.
To make, though. But yes, no, she is away. We've given her away for a very low fee. But you're
well, for a prize on Guardian
Don't go to UK/music. We may well, if we run out of crap CDs on the desk, we may well have to resort to that. Been up to anything exciting? You were out catching hockey early on in the week.
I was, yes.
Much talked about hockey.
Yeah, quite hyped. They sound exactly like the Strokes.
Great.
Yeah, but it's quite depressing. I realised that if you were 16 and watching hockey, then the Strokes' first album came out when you were 7 or something.
Oh wow!
So actually, they're probably ripe for revival.
Yeah, well, we may be talking about something a little similar later on. Thank you for that, though, Tim. We better move into Singles Club apace. And we'll introduce the pod's second guest, the one, the only, the happiest when cruising down the 101 with some Bruce Springsteen running through her hair. It's Laura Barton.
Hello, Paul McGuinness.
How are you?
I'm fine, apart from I've grazed my knee.
You grazed your knee?
Yeah.
How did you do that?
Fell over.
You fell over. I hear you fell over carrying several heavy bags of shopping at the same time. You should get yourself a flunky. You should actually get somebody to carry these things for you.
Yeah.
I'll look into that. Good work. Well, let's do a single then. We're going to kick off with Laura's choice, and that choice is Happiness by Jonathan Jeremiah.
Who's it gonna be? Who's it gonna be? Who'll tell it like it is? And who you gonna blame? Who you gonna blame for all our differences? Where's it gonna end? Where's it gonna end, if anywhere at all? And where you gonna go? Where you gonna go when you can't take it all? I once found a recipe for what to do to cure my needs. I packed some things just for what I need. Only bare necessities.
That was Jonathan Jeremiah with Happiness. Jonathan Jeremiah is a London-based singer-songwriter who has long flowing hair and a denim shirt. His soon-to-be-released debut album was recorded using only analogue equipment. Yes, even the synthesizers were steam-powered. Laura.
I like this gentleman's, the cut of his jib. I think he used to be in a band called Elwood Grace, who were very good. And now he is doing this solo work, which is more kind of Cat Stevens, James Taylor, Scott Walker-esque. But it doesn't seem like a pastiche to me. There's something very timeless and rich to the way he's singing and the actual music. It's supported by the Heritage Orchestra. And I just think it's a lovely, lovely song.
I certainly agree with you on the rich stuff. I found the arrangement really, really beautiful. And it's kind of, for me, like redolent of like early 70s soul, almost Marvin Gaye-ish.
Yeah, and makes me think as well of like Minnie Ripperton, Les Fleurs or something. It's got that elegance.
But what I wonder is, though, is that, you know, this idea of influences and whether it's pastiche or original. Tim, how do you think one kind of avoids straying over that line?
Well, it's very difficult. When I first heard it, I was like, oh, dear. I wasn't sure at all. But I've listened to it a few times, and it has grown on me a bit. And I think he treads a very thin line, doesn't he, between being kind of adult and, like, adult-orientated pop and being very mature and almost quite dull. But actually, he just about pulls it off.
I think his voice is sort of delicious enough to save him.
Yeah, and the arrangements are understated enough as well. It reminded me a bit of someone else who does it really well. It's Kurt Wagner from Lamb Chop. Yeah. And it's got the same kind of strings, like a Curtis Mayfield type string arrangements and stuff.
There was a moment when I first played it and I was worried that he was going to go into Lighthouse Family territory.
Yes.
But I think he hems it. He restrains himself.
Yes. I think with someone like this, what it depends on is their personality and how they market themselves and how where they decide to go with the music, and it could totally go wrong and they could be the next Jack Johnson, or they could, you know, come out with something really interesting.
Yeah, I wonder whether the jury might be out on that, because I fell for it too, and particularly the more I listened to it. But I did wonder whether the deliciousness, the attention to detail, whether that was in itself the mark of a pastiche. I don't know. I suppose you can spend too much time thinking about these things and get wrapped up in it, and it's more about your first response.
I think to me, it's not contrived in the way that a lot of songwriters like Adele or Duffy have been. I think you can see a genuine pleasure in music and delight in music, and the attention to detail is more that slightly spotty approach to music rather than some kind of master plan to conquer the airwaves.
Fair dues. That is Jonathan Jeremiah with Happiness. You can hear that now at myspace.com/Jonathan Jeremiah with an H on the end. And his album Fool in Love will be out in the spring. Next up is Phoenix with 1901.
Watch them build up a material tower, think it's not gonna stay anyway, think it's overrated. For a minute thought I couldn't tell how to
That's 1901 by Phoenix. Phoenix is the reincarnation of X-Man Jean Grey as the most powerful being in the entire Marvel Universe. It's also the name of a French band who wear shirts tucked into their tight jeans and make power pop with an electro twist. This track is the first from their forthcoming fourth album, Wolfgang Amadeus Phoenix. Well, this is my choice, and well, it's one of the, another one of these ones. It's a bit like Rosie with the Maccabees last week. I don't kind of feel I can wholeheartedly endorse this. They're a bit like, we mentioned the Strokes earlier, they're a bit like the Strokes with synths. And to that extent, they're sounding a little bit dated. I don't think they've really moved on from a lot of the stuff, the sound they've made, that they've created in their previous albums. Their lyrics, probably because it's in their second language, are a little bit generic. And I also can't get the word athlete out of my head. But I do feel this band are good at creating an anthemic and urgent feel to their music, and they're particularly good at conveying that live. I think it's in this track. I like the way the synths blend with the bass and the guitar on the hook. It really makes it emphatic. And the tempo is great too. I like the little detail of the trilling guitar in the chorus and the straining of his vocal. So perhaps in the same way we were talking about Jeremiah there, I think it's just little elements that kind of bring it beyond the genre. Although I may well be wrong, I have been before. Tim Jones, what's your thought?
Well, when they came out, I fell in love with them. The first album, I think, United, I was a massive fan of that. I like the way it kind of mixed kind of French dance music with sort of MOR, kind of Fleetwood Mac and all that kind of stuff. But I always saw them as kind of one of the great failures. I thought they were going to be massive. They wrote such good songs and then nothing ever happened. And then, I don't know, I guess this is a more return to their dancier stuff after they went, you know, quite mainstream. I think it's pretty much the same as what they've been doing, only with sort of a synthy part in it. It's probably not going to get big. I think, I wouldn't normally say this, but what they need is kind of to be on an iTunes advert or something like that, don't they?
Yeah.
A bit like Feist did, and just to take off from there and for everyone to get into them from there, because I just see them as constantly putting out this record for the rest of their lives at the moment.
It's funny you say that, because one of the things I thought about Phoenix was that they continue to be cool for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a product of the fact they didn't become very successful. That you would, there were people who are like, who consider themselves, friends of mine who consider themselves to be quite trendy, wouldn't be ashamed about playing their record while their Air CD might have mysteriously disappeared into the back of a cupboard or something. Laura?
Similarly, I absolutely loved United. I think it's sad for them in a way that, or not sad for them, but that sort of 80s tilt their music has is now far more in vogue. And whether it'll be a little bit sad if they don't get the acclaim during that period. But I similarly really like their urgency. This track's got it as well. And the same with, If Ever I Feel Better, which I think is probably my favourite one. They have that real... it's as if you've got, you know, how many minutes left to save the earth. It always feels like that whenever they're playing. And I was thinking earlier today about how, in spirit, they remind me of kind of the House Martins. I can't really explain that, but it's just that kind of good time excitement that I feel in my chest when they're playing.
Well, good.
Good.
Good. I mean,
me.
You know, you can
good for you.
You can download 1901 from wearephoenix.com right now, and if you want to forward it to your mate who works for the iPod commercials, then feel free. Our final track on Singles Club this week is Jeffrey Lewis and Roll Boss Roll. Boss Roll by Jeffrey Lewis. Bonnie Prince Billy may be king of alt-folk, but Jeffrey Lewis, a previous guest on this here pod, is the emperor of anti-folk. Like Billy, he has a lot of guises too. Previously recording under his own name, Lewis has abandoned the Jeffrey altogether. Yes, he's now called Jeff. Tim, you are an unabashed fan of Jeffrey Lewis, and Jeff, and you've picked this track.
It's funny you mentioned Will Oldham, actually, because he did write a song about Will Oldham. A very long and complex song, which went through many different territories I can't go into now. But yeah, he's like my musical hero, really. What I love about most about him is he's so funny. It's almost like stand-up. And so clever. And I think actually Alexis wrote a review of him in the paper the other day, which compared him to Woody Allen, which I think is, you know, a good comparison. But another thing he does, which he does on this song, is he's brilliant at getting across kind of a sort of teenage sense of escape and alienation and angst and just kind of a very melancholic sound. And it comes through his voice, which kind of croaks, and he just can't sing, he just speaks, really. And you know, this song's all about traveling and getting away on the Greyhound and traveling through Harlem. And I think it sort of starts roll, bus, roll, take me off, a rolled sweatshirt makes the window soft. Just a great way with words.
Although strictly factually inaccurate, because a rolled sweatshirt does not make the window soft, because it constantly slips down your face and gets stuck on your shoulder and you end up getting a crick in your neck. Laura.
I love this song. I love Jeffrey Lewis, Jeff. And this one in particular, it just sort of goes to the jugular with me. And right from, even from the opening notes, I feel kind of almost teary with delight. And that sort of acoustic rock out at the end is brilliant. But yeah, it's his way with words as much as anything, and the bit about the taking a couple of Tylenol and stuff like that. I just think he's brilliant and deserves far more celebration.
Get him on an iTunes app.
Because his attention to detail he's got, isn't it? Like you say, the Tylenol, he can really paint a proper picture of what's going on.
He does quite literally paint, well, colours in.
He's a cartoon artist, yes.
He's kind of like Daniel Johnston would be if Daniel Johnston had not lost his marbles, maybe.
Right indeed. The Jeff Lewis Band album will be out later this year. Tim, do you know anything more about when and what and who and if he's coming back to the UK?
He's currently putting together a bit of a TV show, I think, with Rough Trade. Hopefully we'll be having some exciting news on the Guardian/Music website about that, Paul.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, I shall keep my fingers crossed. Thank you very much for that, Tim. Okay. Well, that's it for Singles Club. We'll quickly go through your feedback. Although it was a quiet week on the blog last week, I must have scared you off by adding that picture of James Corden. But the real Chris Marsh did the business with his singles reviews. He said, loving the Malachi track and that Bristol sound. After checking out a bit more on their MySpace, I was pleased to discover that that woozy deck scratching underpins a lot of their work. Tasty. I failed to glean very much from the offering by the Maccabees, other than a desire to don a glum expression, shuffle off to my cold kitchen to put the kettle on, and imagine I was on the dole again. Again? He's got a job. Well done. In these tough financial times, that is a real achievement, so loving that, Chris Marsh. Finally, he did say that he was initially reticent to go much further than a quick listen to Crystal Stilts, but I found myself quite won over by their dreamy, distant, dizzying pop. Good work, the real Chris Marsh. So we want your reviews of this week's tracks, that's Jeff, Phoenix and Jonathan, on our blog, which you can find at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Click through to the relevant show. Tell us what you think of our choices and these other tracks that are out to buy next week. I level up with the best display. My watch said that there ain't time for haters. So if you're looking trouble, no, I ain't into that. I'm just a cool dude out for papers. My name's Chip Diddy Chip. I don't ever tolerate lip diddy lip. I don't play around, I'm just trying to do my music. But say the wrong thing and I'll flip diddy flip. Okay, that is Singles Club. Thank you to Laura Barton for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been really great to have you here. You look very well.
Thanks.
And apart from the knee, which we can't actually see because it's hidden under the table, so that could be grossly swollen and perhaps filled with pus. But the rest of you looks great, and we hope to see you again soon. It's been a while. Please do come back again. You know, please come back. All right. You can read Singles Club on the website, of course, every Wednesday at guardian.co.uk/music, and keep refreshing every day for Tim's Jeff Lewis exclusive. Next up, we bring you the Vivian Girls. That's the Vivian Girls, our second guest today. Guess what? The Vivian Girls are from New York. They're female, yes, really. They're a three-piece, and they've got that woozy garage sound that's a little of the rage right now. Rosie, she may be on holiday, but she's still busy, met the band recently, and having observed that they're pals with both Crystal Stilts and played with Black Lips in London recently, she wanted to know which band has left the greatest impression on them.
I'd say out of all of our touring buddies, Fucked Up has left the biggest impression on me.
I take it in a good way.
Yes. Yes. I don't know, Fucked Up are just like really, really cool people. They each are really different and each are fun to hang out with.
In the interviews that I've read with you previously, there seemed to be quite a lot of emphasis on you guys saying, you know, as soon as you formed, you were really keen to get out touring and playing live. And that you've only been together since 2007, so not long. How quickly into the process of forming and writing these songs did you take them to the stage?
Well, we started in March 2007. We played our first show in May, so I guess like 3 months later. And then we went on tour in July. So we didn't really leave very much time for anything.
And was it a success to take it on?
you know, compared to now, no. But it was really fun. Me and Cassie had never been in a band that went on tour, which is why we toured like 2 months after we were a band. Nobody cared. We were pretty terrible, but it was like all we wanted. We just loved traveling and stuff.
I guess people have an idea of the Brooklyn scene or the New York scene. How much does that influence you? How much of it is it a real scene, you know? That
well, there's like, you know, there's a lot of different scenes, music scenes in New York City, but I would say that the one that we're involved in with like Crystal Stilts, Cause Commotion, Woods, Blank Dogs, I would say it's you know, it is real and it's pretty influential on us. These are people we hang out with all the time, like
it's
outside
pretty
of shows.
Creatively interwoven as
yeah.
well.
We're all really supportive of each other, and we're all really good friends for years now. So,
and what are your musical, you know, what did you grow up listening to and influenced
well,
by?
Well, we all grew up listening to like different music, but me personally, like more hardcore than anything else, like Minor Threat, Black Flag, 80s hardcore, and punk stuff. But now,
what about the rest of the band?
Cassie, I would say soft rock. Like, she was really into Billy Joel and stuff like that. And Allie really likes pop punk. Me and Cassie went to high school together, so we met at a Weezer concert. Now we just think about Nirvana.
Why did it, if you met in high school, why did it, was it 2007 that you suddenly said, you know, actually let's be in a band together, or was it, did it start much earlier?
Well, I never played an instrument until Vivian Girls. So Cassie was in a band in high school called Upholstery, and I wasn't in it, I couldn't play an instrument or anything. They had a song called Kickball Katie, which is my name, and I was in like basement punk bands with Allie, our drummer. Allie moved to Germany, and so we were all just like left, me and Cassie were left without bands, and that's when they started.
And did you sort of decide what you wanted to sound like, or what you know, or did you just suddenly get into writing together?
No, we just got into writing songs, and our abilities and our, you know, the tones that we preferred in our amps, like, just shaped the sound that we have now.
Give us an idea of what people can expect from the new album and when they can expect it.
The songs are going to be longer because all the songs on our first album are almost all of them are under 2 minutes. But we have some songs that are like 2 minutes, 45 seconds,
Ooh.
Maybe even 3
You're
minutes.
It's a prog rock.
I know, right? The songs are longer, darker. I think there's less happy songs. Like on our first record, the first side's all happy love songs and the B-side's all like miserable songs, and I think there's more miserable songs on this one, so that's good.
So more misery from the
more
Vivian
misery
Girls.
Yeah,
your first single, while I sold out effectively, or was it the first, it was the first,
was the first
LP
that sold
LP.
out, but
so they pressed 500 copies.
Yes.
And I've read that you sort of said, oh, that's too much to do, so obviously the
we were initially going to do 300, and then people like started, I don't know, I guess emailing about it, and so we were like, I guess we'll make 500, and they sold out really fast, and that was really surprising.
And did that taste of success make you particularly ambitious as a band? You know, did you?
I'm sure it gave us some internal momentum. Right when that happened, we were all like really psyched. So I guess that probably helped.
And would you consider, you know, signing up a big 5-album deal with a major label?
Never. Never. We're really happy with where we are right now.
That's the Vivian Girls, and they'll be back in the UK this summer for the festival season. Well, that's about it for this week. A quiet one when Rosie's not here. You know, it just lacks that necessary, you know, joie de vivre. But we've got a little bit of time for your face back. We've got new friends. We've got Neil Mosley, East End Thrift Store, not a real person, Belaine Figueroa Gonzalez, Carmen Leighton Bennett, Rob James, and Stephen McDonald. Stephen McDonald claims to have enjoyed our NASA feature so much the other week that he's now addicted to them. He's addicted. I wonder what happens if he goes 2 days without listening to them. Involuntary electric boogaloo. Tim, have you ever seen anybody be addicted to a band, like physically?
No.
I think that's the only sensible answer. Over on Facebook, we had a little bit of two pals piling in on the friends page, the fan page, rather. The fan page is Music Weekly. You can search for it. You can become a fan. Joe Narini wrote on that page, "Hey, been listening to your podcast recently and finding loads of great music. I've especially enjoyed listening to Devil's Trident by Telepathy. I really think you should get both Broadcast 2000 and Metric on sometime soon. They both have new albums out soon and are both brilliant live bands. Thanks, Smiley Kiss." The next comment is from Isaac Parr. "Ah, Joe, you gave a kiss, you fool." So Isaac and Joe have a healthy masculine relationship there. And you can make comments like that too by going to our page. That's it till next Friday. Register now on the site or at iTunes to get the podcast sent straight to your computer or MP3 player for free. Guardian.co.uk/music is the place. Become our friend on Facebook or indeed our fan by searching for Guardian Music. That's all for this week. Thanks to Tim.
I'm actually not leaving, Paul.
Why?
Because I'm addicted to this podcast.
We'll see you next Friday. Bye.